Session number 19926, Reel 3.
Bennett Xavier, Reel 3.
So in the meantime, I want you to go to the red light district in Kuilin. There's a lot of the Japanese agents are there. So try to find out what they want, what sort of information they're seeking. I said, well, I don't know anybody there. You try your best, you see. I went there several times, like I could not give him any information at all. I mixed with the crowd, but couldn't get anything out of him. Nobody. Nobody seems to want to help. And then one day he called me in, the office is, he was paying me, by the way. He was giving me, I think, US dollars, about $60 a month. He called me in the office. He said, I got a job for you, he says. I said, what's that? He said, but before I proceed, he says, the United States will not be responsible for you. I said, oh, he said, because you're still in the British Navy. He said, I want you to go to Macau. And with you, I want you to bring one of our agents' son with you. He holds an American passport. At that time, I didn't know. I said, fair enough. He gave me the route to go back to Macau, which is the safest way, he says, the safest route. So, okay. I took that route back. We went through Japanese lines and all that. And when we reached Porto Cerco, crossed Porto Cerco, that's Portuguese territory, my eyes lit it, got through. Away from the enemy lines. But my instructions from Captain Otte was to find out all about what the Japanese knew about the Kuilin Air Base. Why are their bombing so accurate? He used this word, he said, I don't give a shit what you do, he says. I'm not responsible for you, but I want this information. Whatever happens to you, it's entirely out of my hands, she says. He says, we'll give you the contact man in Macau. Your name of that guy is a Mr. Cordova. He will then get put you in touch with a German general, retired general, by the name of Harrendorf. When I arrived in Macau, I went to see this fellow Cordova. He gave me the name and address, of course, of this fellow. I got in touch with him. He said, yes. He knew all about me. He said, I'll make an appointment for you to go and see this German general. I can't remember the exact date now, but a few days after I arrived in Macau, I went to see him. He came out with an iron cross in his neck, this German general. I said, I am Holland officers. He says, can I help you? I says, Mr. Cordo introduced me to you. Told me that you could help me to get in touch with the Japanese gendarme headquarters. He said, what do you know? I said, I just came back from Kuala Nassau. I'll give the Japanese all the information about the airport if they want to know. Because my instruction was to find out from the Japanese what they know. In the meantime, what you know, they will give it to them because they already knew. I said, fair enough. So I told this German general, he says, I got to go and see the colonel in the Japanese headquarters before I can give you a date. He said, I'll contact you in a week's time. So he says, I know who to contact you, he says. So I left it at that. I stayed with my parents, which was evacuated from Hong Kong to Macau at that time. And after about a week, I was told by this German general to see him. I went to see him. He said, yes, he says. I made arrangements for you to go and see the Japanese gendarme headquarters, he says, and see the Japanese colonel. He said, make no mistake, he says, the Japanese are very ruthless, he says. Whatever you tell them, you better tell them the truth. Otherwise, they wouldn't have it. You know the consequences. Fair enough. Being young and damn stupid I was, I made a point to see went inside the Japanese gendarme headquarters with this Portuguese agent of mine, but he waited outside. He didn't come in. He wouldn't go in. I went in this Japanese headquarters and this Japanese colonel. He said, my name is Colonel Saito. He says, what can I do for you, young man?
What language were you speaking?
I spoke to him in English. He had a Japanese interpreter there, but he could speak English. Because he turned around and said to me, I'm Colonel so-and-so, what can I do for you? But the interpreter, after when I spoke, he stopped then. He didn't say a word. He was listening to his interpreter. I said, I can give you information about the Kuilin Air Force, the aerodrome. Well, he stood up. He says, you can? I said, yes. He said, what do you know of the Kuilin Air Force? I said, well, I know a lot, I said, about the base. Oh, he says. He said, why do you come to me for? I said, because you're the only one here, the Japanese gendarme headquarters. I said, there's no other Japanese military here. Oh, he says. I said, I want to work for the Japanese. Oh, yes, he says. He says, all right, he says. I didn't stop long the first interview for about half an hour at the very most. He asked me about Kuilin, how do I like Kuilin and all that. What are the girls there and all, so and so. So I told him all about it. And he said, all right, we'll contact you. We know how to contact you, he says. We'll let you know. About 3 weeks passed, nothing. Out of the blue, after 3 weeks, this Portuguese agent, Cordova, told me that the Japanese headquarters want to see me again. At so-and-so time, it was always in the evening. So I went there. And this colonel sat at the table. He had a pad and a pencil. He said, I want you to draw the map of the airport, the aerodrome, and point out where they keep their planes, where the petrol, the ammunition, their sleeping quarters, the pilot's sleeping quarters, etc., etc. So I wrote it all down. He's all right, no more, he says. We'll contact you again.
Did you know the information they wanted?
Yes, well, Captain Naughty told me. If they want the information, give it to them. Because they already knew. He said that because their bombing was so accurate. You follow me? So I said, well, I gave him all that. All right, he said, okay. So he shoved me $100 in my hand, the Japanese. I wouldn't refuse money, so he gave it to me.
This was Japanese money?
No, Portuguese money. And this is in Macau. When I came out, the agent again was, how's it, Ben? I said, oh, all right. I said, yeah, think nothing. Again, being young and stupid. He said, we'll contact you again. This colonel, before I left, he said, we'll contact you again. 3 or 4 days afterwards, again, this agent came. He says, look, you're wanted by the Japanese headquarters again. In the meantime, Mr. Braga, the British intelligence officer there, I informed him what was going on. I was passing what the interview was all about to him. You follow me?
Where did you meet Mr. Braga?
Mr. Braga was my man in charge of the British intelligence in Macau. I was to meet him. I forgot to say earlier on that whatever information I have, pass it on to Mr. Braga.
But where did you meet him?
In Macau, in his house. You see, he was the managing director of the Macau Electric Water Works or something like that. I'm not sure. But he was the British in charge of the British intelligence in Macau. And also, Mr. Braga told me that it is too dangerous for me to see him often. The Japanese will suspect, because the Japanese knew that he was the British intelligence officer in Macau. He said, your next contact man that will pay you money is a Mr. Lobo, a Portuguese well-to-do man in Macau. He will pay you whatever expenses or whatever money you're entitled to. So all this was already prior to all this meeting with the Japanese. You follow me? And I told Mr. Braga that I'm contacting this Japanese headquarters again. They wanted to see me. I went in to see this Japanese colonel. To my surprise, big table, they draw a big map of Kuilin, and amongst the officers, all high-ranking Japanese Air Force officers. They all had the big swords in them. God, I look at them. I said, blimey, there's something big going on. They asked me different questions. They wasn't satisfied where their most interested where the hangars are. That was their main concern. The second concern was where they keep the ammunition, the bombs and all that. And I told them. And they were saying something in Japanese. I don't know Japanese, but they were saying they shook their heads and all that to say, oh, yes, that's accurate, more or less, you know. And I stayed there for about 3 hours. They kept me, interrogating me on all the questions over and over again. In the meantime, this agent of mine outside, the Japanese didn't know that he was outside. But he was well away from the, you know, standing outside. He was sweating. He thought the Japanese must have found out that I was an agent. Psh, chopped my head off. After all this long interview, they gave me, $200 or $300 Macau dollars. They said, well, we'll contact you again. Thank you very much. I walked out. This agent, he was sweating. He says, good God. And I walked out whistling. He said to me, he says, how you got the guts to come out whistling and all that? He said, I don't know. I said, it's all right. He said, no problem, you know. Well, again, being young and stupid. And that was the end when I, my last interview was with the Japanese, which all the instructions what I had or information what I gave to the Japanese was passed back to Mr. Braga via this Portuguese man, Lobo. After about a month or so, the Japanese smelled a rat. I think they must have smelled a rat that I was an agent. They knew I had a brother in Hong Kong. They got hold of him. They threw him in the clink in Hong Kong. They interrogated him. They kept him for 2 years in jail in Hong Kong. But of course, my brother didn't know what I was doing. He couldn't. Mr. Lobo said to me, he says, look, he said, you got to keep a low profile. Oh, by the way, before the interview ended with the Japanese, they did ask me about Kuai Lin, the fortifications of Kuai Lin, whether there are American troops stationed out there, what sort of fortification the Americans have there, big guns and so forth, or they have Chinese troops protecting the air base. The way they asked me, I came to the conclusion that they wanted to invade the base, to invade Kuai Lin. I passed this information to the British intelligence, Mr. Braga, via Mr. Lobo. And of course, after 2 or 3 months afterwards, the Japanese did take Kuai Lin Air Base. They took it. So it proved my theory was right. In the meantime, I think the Americans had time to prepare to evacuate before the Japanese took over. I stayed in Macau, and this Portuguese embargo said to me, you must keep a low profile. And one day, Braga's agent came to me and says, you'll have to disappear from Macau. I said, well, the Japanese will get hold of me. They are all around circling Macau. How can I escape? He said, the only thing is, you've got to stay in Macau, but you've got to hide in a place. I said, where? He says, in your mother's house. I said, okay. He says, but you mustn't come out. And in Macau, those houses, you know, my mother's got a flat underneath the ground floor. The first floor was very, very flimsy. You can see through those Macau houses.
Do you remember the address?
I know the road, Rua Don Quixote. I can't remember the number. And my mother was frightened and all that. She said, the only thing, she said, these people, the Chinese people upstairs, they can look through and they can see you. They tip the Japanese off. So she said to me, the best is to hide under the bed. All during the daytime, I hid under the bed. I had my meals, my toilet, everything under the bed for 3 solid months. Until one day, I think it was Mr. Braga's agent said to me, it's all right now, it's gone quiet. He said, you better join the, we can't arm you, because Portugal is neutral. You better join the Macau police force. We will arrange for you to go in the Macau police force. They arranged for me to join the Macau police. But in the meantime, I joined the police. And the Chinese agents all knew me in Macau. They tipped me about, I was on duty one day near Praia Grande. Tipped me about Japanese are buying petrol from the Portuguese government in exchange for rice. There's a certain date down the pier, the Japanese boats will come alongside the pier and pick up all these in exchange for rice. Of course, I tipped Bragarov, the chief of British intelligence. I said, you can expect a load of petrol, Portuguese petrol, that was in Macau, in exchange for rice. He informed American intelligence. Next few hours, I think, the American planes came over and bombed it. You know, sank all the Japanese ships in Macau. And Pedro Lobo, this Portuguese man, that's a rich, wealthy man, when I went for my money, he said, you're a fine one. He says, I nearly lost my life on account of you. I said, how did you know it was me? He said, never mind. He said, you tipped the Japanese. I didn't know you tipped the Japanese so soon. I went there to sign the papers for clearance. He said, I was nearly shot up by the Americans. You know, he was very angry with me. I said, well, I can't help it. I didn't know that you was going there. And he said, well, you better go to... I was then stationed in Macau proper. He said, the Japanese, if they find out it was you who gave the information, they'll shoot you without any question. Your best bet is we'll transfer to an island outside Macau, and you stay there till we tell you it's all clear again. Well, I stayed there for the duration of the war, until the war was over. I never went back to Macau itself, because I had my food all that. I never set foot in Macau again. And as soon as after the war, when Japanese surrender came, the British Consul sent a courier to me in this island to say that a British minesweeper will be outside Macau to pick you back. You have to rejoin the Navy again. And one of these Liberty boats came alongside Macau proper. That was after the surrender, a few days after the surrender. I went to Praia Grande to pick up this Liberty boat, and they took me straight back to the minesweeper, HMS Parrot. And there I rejoined the Navy again. That was it.
What was the name of the island where you...
Colowan.
How do you feel now about your service in the Second World War?
I'm disappointed. I didn't work for money. All I want is a thank you, but I got nothing. That's all.
Did you not get any recognition at all?
No, not even a thank you. And then when after the war, the Navy will not release me, I got several good offers in the civilian positions. The Navy will not release me because I'm not a HO. I was a regular. I signed on for 8 years, and in 1948, on the dot, they released me. But all the cream jobs, all the top jobs were gone. So in 1950, I went to see my commanding officer, Lieutenant Commander. He was then a Commander Kirby. He was in charge of the Hong Kong Club. I explained my position to him. He says, yes, I know you're in the Navy. He says, they would not release you, will they? I said, no. He says, I know what you have done, he said. You've done us proud. He said, I'll tell you what, he says. How would you like to go to UK or to any of our territories like Canada, New Zealand, Australia? Or even Singapore or India. I said, but Commander, I said, I'm married to a Chinese girl. I said, I've got two kids. Well, it doesn't matter, he says. It's you, not them. We are concerned about you. You can take all your whole family with you. So we will arrange everything for you, the Admiralty. So I said, okay. I think on the 22nd, everything was done. I picked UK. because my love for racing pigeons. And UK was very famous for this, racing pigeons. That's my hobby. Even in Hong Kong, I had racing pigeons. So I picked UK, my wife, her passage, everything was booked. The Navy, or Commander Kirby, gave me £1,000. I bought all the clothing for the kids, everything for her. And she said, and Commander Kirby told me, "So you don't worry, when you get to England, the Colonial Office people will meet you." Fair enough. And my sailing date was on the 21st of December, 1950. In the last minute, like I was going to sail tomorrow, evening time about 6 o'clock, my wife says, "I'm not going with you." I said, "But everything is booked. Even the kids, they got a, what do you call them? Look after the kids, what do you call them?
A nanny?
Nanny. On the ship, will look after your kids and all, you have nothing to worry. Everything is arranged for you." I told my wife this, she says, "No, I'm not going with you." She comes from a very rich family. Her father or her uncle was a famous Chinese doctor, practiced English medicine, or European medicine, so to speak. And they're very well-off people. And it's the father that was against her daughter coming to England with me. They call me Kuai Lo, devil's man, because I'm a foreigner. And I tried to convince her, I couldn't. But I, by the way, I can't read and write Chinese. I can speak the language, but I cannot read and write. So I came to England. My parents were still in Hong Kong. And she used to come to my parents' house with the kids and all that. And my parents, obviously at the time, used to give her money, but when my parents decided to go to the States for good, of course they went to San Francisco. I lost all contact with my wife and the kids. From this day, I don't know where they are. From this very day. And I got my divorce after 30-odd years. And I married my present wife with 2 children by her.
When you came to England, where did you settle in England?
I settled in Isleworth. And I took a job at the airport as an interpreter. With, I think, a BOAC, I think. Was it BOAC or BEA or something? I'm not sure. British European Airways. Because
which languages were you translating?
Well, I never once translated. Mostly everyone could speak English. I speak Portuguese, I speak a little Italian, and I speak Spanish.
And Chinese.
And Chinese, Cantonese, but I never used it, not once. But the money was so poor, I tried the bank, and the money was very poor. And I met a friend of mine, he was an ex-prisoner, also in Hong Kong, by the name of James Ford. He said, "The only time you want to earn money is to go in a factory and work." And I did. I joined different factories and all that. And worst of all, I joined Cape Asbestos Company. They were paying good money at that time. And after 6 months with them, I quit because the priest that I knew in Macau was a Jesuit priest. He met me in Hayes. We made an appointment. I met him in Hayes. He said, "What sort of a job are you doing?" I told him I was doing a laboring job. He said, "But you're not the type to work as a factory hand or a laborer." He said, "You're quite well educated." He says, "I tell you what," he says, "I know you Latin people like cooking," he says. "How about taking up a course as regards cooking?" So he said, "Leave it to me, I'll make arrangements for you to go to school," which he did, made arrangements. I went to Slough for my training. I didn't complete my course, being big-headed. 6 months after that, I said, "I'll blow this for a lark." So I joined Charles Fortis here. I went in as a spud boy, peeling spuds. I ended up as HF. Then I branched off on my own. After a while, I saved some money. I bought my house.